Thank you very much. I'm glad to see so many people here so early in the morning. First, I'm going to give you a very brief overview about the biology and what we know about the genetic system in Metacelus occidentalis, a phytoseed mite, and some past work that we've done with genetic improvement using both artificial selection and recombinant DNA methods. Talk about some recent work on sequencing the mitochondrial genome of this predatory mite and the identification of symbiont genomes, and then talk about what we're attempting to do with the nuclear genome. As you probably are well aware, mites contain multiple genomes, not only the nuclear genome, but mitochondrial, and then many mites contain microbial symbionts. In the case of Metacelus occidentalis, this includes bacteria, and we have also found a microsporidial pathogen. In other arthropods, it's not uncommon at all for there to be fungi, viruses, and protozoa as symbionts. And you've already heard that spider mites and other mites are pests of plants, but they have a number of natural enemies, and phytoseeds are one of the key natural enemy families important in agriculture. And Metacelus occidentalis, also known as Galindromus or Typhlodromus, is an important predator in the western U.S., but it has also been exported and established in Australia and New Zealand and peaches, apples, and other crops. It's a wonderful predator to work on, particularly as a geneticist. It goes from egg to adult in about a week, depending on the temperature. Females lay 2 to 3 eggs a day for about a week, and the sex ratio typically is 2.5 to 3 females per male, and they are obligatory predators. Years ago, we did some studies because we were puzzled by the fact that, unlike spider mites, all phytoseed and Metacelus occidentalis females need to mate to produce any eggs, despite the fact that using cytology, people had determined that males have 3 chromosomes and females have 6 as adults. And this suggested that they were a rhenotocus. But we were wondering why mating was required. And what we discovered with some irradiation experiments is that males are required to produce all progeny, all eggs are fertilized, and that if you irradiate males and the chromosomes are damaged, the resultant few females are produced, and all the resultant F1 males were sterile. And this was determined to be a novel genetic system called parahaploidy, or sometimes known as pseudo-arenotoki. And Walter Nelson Reese, a colleague of mine at Berkeley, was familiar with this system and looked at it cytologically. And what we discovered is that during embryonic development, males that begin life as diploid organisms but lose half of their chromosomes, they are heterochromatinized and extruded from the nucleus and lost, and then the adult male is haploid, at least in the germline, and these they undergo mitoses in their testes. We have a number of questions about this very interesting system. How are the paternally derived chromosomes marked? We believe that most of the time it's the paternally derived chromosomes that are heterochromatinized and lost. We don't know how they're marked and recognized. We saw pairing of homologous chromosomes prior to this heterochromatization, and we saw crossing over, or what appeared to be crossing over, occurring. And so this is very interesting because it's possible, if this is the case, that genetic exchange is going on so that these parahaploid mites have the benefits of recombination and yet also remain haploid as adults so that selection can occur on the haploid genome. Another aspect of genetics of this mite is that we've been involved in trying to domesticate it further for its use in pest management. And we conducted artificial selection projects for pesticide resistances and for non-diapause, as well as using recombinant DNA methods. When I did this work, I was in California at the University of California, and I began working particularly in almonds, and we discovered that Metastulus occidentalis is a very important predator in almond orchards in the San Joaquin Valley. However, when pesticides were applied, whether they were OPs or carbamates, to control navel orangeworm, mite disruption occurred. So we selected a strain that was resistant to carbaryl, OPs, and sulfur, and released them. And as you can see, the predators were not released on the left side of the grove. This almond orchard defoliated. It did not receive carbaryl. It just the mite pressure in almonds in this hot, dry climate can be very severe. On this side of the road, we released the carbaryl OP sulfur resistant strain. It provided excellent control despite the fact that carbaryl was applied twice during the growing season. This integrated mite management program was adopted in California, and despite the fact that it cost money to rear, release, and monitor, growers did save a substantial amount of money from reduced pesticide use to control mites, and ranging from $24 per acre to $44 an acre. We also developed a method for transforming these predatory mites so that we could develop transgenic strains. And this was in the era when I thought it would be possible to release genetically modified predators using recombinant DNA methods into the environment. And it's 2008, and we still aren't at that point. But in any case, we have a method, and it involved simply injecting plasmid DNA directly into the abdomens of the females at a reasonably low rate, approximately 1%, we did get transformation, and we had stable integration. And in the future, I think that this technology could be applied if we once we have useful genes to put in phytoseed mites. We also have done some work recently with microbial symbionts. Years ago, we did some and showed that we had Wolbachia in this predator. Subsequently, using a 16S amplification of microbial genes, cloning and sequencing, we discovered that we have two different microbial symbionts present in the reproductive tracts of Metastulus occidentalis, including Cardinium and Wolbachia. And so far, at least in our colonies, under our lab conditions, using heat and antibiotics, we have not been able to eliminate these microorganisms. Using high-fidelity PCR, we still get positive signals. So we can't discriminate between the role of Cardinium and Wolbachia in our colonies. In addition, we have several strains of Bacteroides and Enterobacter. These are common genera found in the guts of many arthropods, and we believe that they are consistently found. Additional research clearly needs to be done to determine what they do and whether, at least in the case of the Wolbachia and Cardinium, whether any of those genomes are actually inserted into the nuclear genome. It's recently been shown that some Wolbachia genomes have been moved into the genomes of Drosophila species and of other insect species, so they have become tightly integrated in the biology of their host. And I'm sure that next few years, we'll discover that microbial symbionts play a very important role in mite biology, more than we can even dream of now. We also moved into looking at the mitochondrial genome of this predatory mite. As many of you know, phytoseed systematics is difficult. Relatively low morphological variability, and it's difficult. That's why the species I work on has three different genus names. So we wanted to see whether we could get additional molecular sequences available. And what we found is that this particular mitochondrion is very unusual. Typically, a mitochondrial genome is 16 or so kb in size. Occidentalis's genome is unusually large, and it has a unique gene order. And it's, if you look here, this is the standard size of a genome for the basal arthropod, and It's approximately 16 kb. This is the size of Metastelesoxyntalis. It has duplications and triplications. And because we sequenced the genome from our carbaryl OP sulfur resistant strain, we're speculating that it might possibly be related to pesticide resistance, perhaps even the sulfur resistance. But that remains to be determined in future studies. Just in the last few months, we have looked at estimating the genome size of this predatory mite. And despite the fact that it has the mitochondrial genome is the largest known so far for any arthropod. Despite the fact it has the largest known mitochondrial genome of an of a chelicerate so far, it has the second smallest nuclear genome so far. We used two different methods. One involved flow cytometry, and the other involved a high fidelity quantitative PCR. And what we have here is a list of genome sizes. The smallest known so far is the two-spotted spider mite, Tetranychus urticae. And this is Metastelesoxyntalis here in red, and it seems to have a genome size of approximately 88 to 90 megabases. Whereas we have, as you can see, ticks with gigabase size genomes, and it's very interesting how diverse the genome sizes are. I am wanting to speculate that because spider mites and the spider seed have a short generation time of approximately 1 week, that this may reflect the size of the why the genomes are so relatively small. Currently, we are involved in sequencing the transcriptome of this predatory mite. We have evaluating multiple life stages held under different environmental conditions using 454 pyro sequencing. And our ultimate goal, because its genome is relatively small, is to sequence the entire genome. And we hope that this will be acceptable and funded based on the fact that it is an important natural enemy in agriculture. We have relatively few chelicerata analyzed. Two-spotted spider mite and tick genomes are being analyzed now. It's the second smallest arthropod genome known, and it could be very interesting if it turns out to be as unusual as the mitochondrial genome. We also have some pesticide resistance genes that might be of value in future work. It would be a first parahaploid species sequenced, and we hope that any genes that we uncover will be useful for future phylogenetic analyses in this family and for taxonomic purposes. Much remains to be learned about the genetics and genomics of this predatory mite, and we hope that whole genome sequencing may answer some of these, and we are looking very actively and for collaborators for this work. So if any of you in the room would like to share in the ultimate annotation and analysis work, we'd be very grateful to hear from you. Thank you. Rick.
With respect to heterochromization, I'm just struck by the fact that Wolbachia is in there. You may remember whenever we made crosses of Brian Crofton between strains, the female to male ratio jumped up. I'm just wondering if it's actually Wolbachia, because you can get funny things happening in crosses with Drosophila Wolbachia involved. I'm wondering if it's Wolbachia that's actually driving the sex ratio, distortions from the crosses, and that they're somehow involved in heterochromization.
It's not impossible, but the other problem with all of this is that cardenium is also associated with the sex ratio modification in some parasitoids and in other arthropods. So because we can't segregate out the cardenium and the Wolbachia so far, we can't look at that. So the answer is we don't know, but we've thought about it too.